Welcome, everyone. It's a delight to be here. And I must say that I am so honored to have been asked to speak on this particular subject, which has been close to my heart for many, many years now. And the subject itself is to speak about how Master's teachings are expressed through our Education for Life philosophy as it manifests in our Living Wisdom schools. And behind all of this is a deep connection between what Master gave Swami Kriyananda and what Swami Kriyananda gave us. In my case, it goes back to 1986, when Swami called a few of us for a meeting at Ananda Village. He had just published his book, Education for Life. And he wanted to sit down and discuss with us what were the key precepts within that book. Some of us were educators, but not all. And since that moment in 1986, I actually have been living with Education for Life. I've been a teacher at the university and college level, at high school, at middle school, and at elementary school. And for the last 23 years, I have been at the Living Wisdom School in Palo Alto. Now, the Living Wisdom School is based on the philosophy of Education for Life. And in our school, we bring it to life. We breathe life into it in a way that is transformational for our children. It's been an honor to see that transformative action in powerful way in our school. You can see it too, and I will tell you more about that later on. So what exactly is Education for Life? Very briefly, it is an alternative to the kind of education that we see operating in our schools today, both public and private, where the premise is that intellect, the development of the intellect, will lead to employment. And that's a very narrow prescription for education. In Education for Life means so much more than earning money, gaining power, having prestige. Rather, it's about creating an inner satisfaction with life and an inner happiness. So I want to quote from the book right now, because nobody can say it better than Swami Kriyananda. He says that Education for Life means how to live healthfully, how to concentrate and develop one's ability to be a good employee or a good boss, to find a suitable partner, to harmonize home life, to acquire balance in life, and to use common sense. That's quite a broad prescription. And it does all of that. So what does that look like? How does one see that unfold in a classroom or in a school? There actually is no easy answer to that, and I'll begin to tell you why. But first, I want to take us back to some years ago, actually quite a few years ago. I was relatively new at the school. We were sending our net out trying to magnetize the children who would profit the most from this particular philosophy, and I had invited prospective parents to come for an informational meeting. So we spent about 40 minutes together, and I explained, as I am explaining today, the kinds of things that we were doing and what we hoped for their children. It was a very good meeting, I would say. They were receptive, and then they were all leaving the room. But I turned around, and there was this woman who was lingering. And in that moment, I said, "Can I help you?" And she came towards me, and she said, "I have a confession." And I was surprised. She said, "I'm not a parent." And then she said, "I'm a spy." Well, she really had my attention. And then she kind of laughed, and she said, "Really?" She said, "I'm a psychologist, and I have been doing research and writing on different schools and their philosophies of education for a long time now. I've made my way all through the schools here in Silicon Valley. And today, when I came to your school, I have to tell you, when I walked through the gate, I felt the molecules in the air change. And there was something uplifting I couldn't put a word on it until you took us on a tour of the classrooms. And when I saw the children, then I knew it was joy. They were all smiling. They were so happy to relate to one another, to relate to the teacher, to do their work. There was just a level of contentment and happiness in this school that I have never found at another school. Now, I'm not exaggerating, and I must say that she was right, that our children are happy to come to school, and their happiness is actually what defines the learning experience. I thought for the occasion that I would let you hear some of the children's voices on that very subject. This book that I'm holding in my hand is our annual literary magazine. The title of it is Living Wisdom School Angels Have a Lot to Say. And an unusual year it was because of the pandemic. So for March through June, we were on Zoom. It's quite a rhyme. And learning at a distance. But even so, the children were able to write their poetry. And some of their poetry is just fun, some is silly, and some is profound. Now, before I share the poem that I actually had in mind, I'll just give you a taste of what some of the children are writing because it betrays a frame of mind. Now, here's a six-year-old, kindergarten, and he writes about the sun. And he says, "While the sun rests in the air, the flower helps his little grass sisters." And I thought, that's profound. That's absolutely gorgeous for a little one. And then, because he's seeing the unity of all things in terms of friendship. And then here's another little one. He's 5 years old. He's probably in TK, or was. And he's writing about furry monsters. "The yellow furry monster hid from the giant lobster, whose name was Bobster." And you can see he's playing with language. But then he gets to his point, and he says, "They became friends, and that never ends." And again, you see them expressing one of the values of Living Wisdom School, which is about friendship and about kindness. In fact, two of our school rules, the ones that we really begin with, are choose happiness, be responsible for your own happiness, and practice kindness. Now, the poem that I really want to share with you is called School, and it's written by a fifth grader. A little background, she came to us in the fourth grade after having an early education experience that was supremely negative. This is a child who was sunny and bright and naturally joyful, what we would call light energy. And her mother, who was also a psychologist, explained that she had no particular reason, could find no particular reason why her daughter was so unhappy at school. But that over the few years, kindergarten, first, second, third grade, it had become harder and harder for her to go to school. That she was actually in pain that began to express in terms of ill health. So the mom was, of course, quite concerned. Well, this little girl comes to our school, and at the end of her fifth grade year, she writes a poem which she entitled School. She's 11 years old. "Every morning I wake up knowing today will be like no other day, because school is where I am going, and each class is unique in its own way. When I walk into school, this is what I hear. I hear teachers, children, and wind chimes, sounds of laughter and joy, but never fear. These sounds make me feel happier every time." And I noticed, never fear, something registering from her previous experience. And then she goes on. "When I walk out at recess, this is what I see. Classrooms and trees and flowers, Best of all, friendly faces are smiling at me. And she doesn't stop there, and here's the zinger. But kindness is not about power. And that speaks to an experience she had of the power of cliques in her old school. And finally she ends, when I work in the classroom, this is what I'm feeling. I feel happy and safe to just be me. Living Wisdom School is a place of healing. While I am at school, joyful will I be. So joyful will she be. And joyful are our children. When they get to school in the morning, they bounce out of the cars or off of their roller skates or roller boards, whatever it is, however they get there, and they are happy to be there. They greet each other, they greet the teachers, they greet me. Now, this poem that I just read leads me into one of the deepest realities of an education for life. And that is the idea that every child is a spark of divine light. Every child is a spark of the divine light. And they come into this world with a unique purpose and a potential that unfolds over a lifetime. And that uniqueness shines in many different ways. So an education that is customized, organized to take in the whole group isn't going to work with the unique child in front of the teacher. So that changes the whole equation of lockstep education. And it acknowledges the necessity to see the individuality and to teach to the individuality of the student. So education for life is not a one-size-fits-all philosophy. It is far more realistic and more practical than that. So given that, I think it would be a good thing to talk about how Yogananda's teachings, as they came to us through Kriyananda, are represented in the stories of individual students. And I'm reminded of one student who sits in my memory with just so many good thoughts. His name was Peter. And he came to us from a highly reputable prep school in Oakland, California. There, the name of the game was all about grades, competition, getting into a great high school, and then a great college, making a lot of money and making your way through life in that respect. But Peter's self-esteem was in tatters. I had a chance to chat with him alone, and I found him charming. As a matter of fact, for a fifth grader, he was remarkable. He had a sense of humor, and there was a spark in his eyes. And Swami Kriyananda always told us, if you want the children who will do the best in an Education for Life school, look for the spark in the eyes. They have to have bright eyes, he said. And so Peter had that. And I accepted him to the school. Of course, I didn't realize at the time that his great attribute was for comedy. Peter was a comedian. And he could disrupt a class with laughter in a nanosecond. The math teacher would be trying to start the class, and Peter would be impersonating the pujari with the turban around his head and the incense that he'd stolen from the altar, and he'd be going around blessing everybody, or whatever. But he just had this comic sensibility that, in a way, reminds me of Robin Williams. At the same time, he was dyslexic, and so reading was difficult for him, writing was difficult for him, but he had this lively intellect and imagination, how to make it work. Well, that's not a problem in an Education for Life classroom, because it's not a high-stress, competitive atmosphere. It's not a one-size-fits-all. It's what does this child need? Let's support him. And so we did. We appreciated his comedy. We appreciated his intelligence. We appreciated all the effort that he went to, because he had a phenomenal work ethic. And all to say that resulted in a boy that left us in eighth grade to go on to high school who was far more integrated, far more self-assured and confident than the little child who had come to us in the sixth grade. He went on to high school at Palo Alto, just down the street, and he checked in with me later on and told me he had received a 4.0 all through high school, which that was something. That was an accomplishment. And then, though, I got a phone call, and he said, "Helen," he said, "I just want you to know that I was accepted at Stanford." And what was so beautiful about it was that he actually said, "I couldn't have done it without you and all the teachers at Living Wisdom." And so off he went to Stanford. He majored in history and graduated a few years ago. I haven't heard from him for a while, but I look forward to it. Now, you might think that's just a one-time case. That's very unusual, very unique. Any school will have those miracle stories. But no, we have those stories all the time. And I could tell many of them, but I don't have the time. So I'll tell you just one more that is more recent. At least I know what the ending so far is. I just got an email from a mother of one of our graduates. And when she was with us, she was just the sweetest little girl, but she was also shy and uncertain. Very intelligent. One of her strengths was language arts, which was my class. I taught her. But math was a different story. And Gary, our math teacher, thought that it was not so much about her inability to take in the concepts, but rather it was more about a lack of confidence. So by the time she left us, she was doing much better in that department. She could carry herself through the world. And she went on to high school and then later to UC Davis, University of California at Davis. And then the word came back. She had decided to major in genetics. And Gary and I looked at ourselves at each other and said, "That just is amazing, because there's so much math in genetics." Well, she visited, and I asked her about it, and she said, "You know, I know there's a lot of math in there, and I know that's not my strength, or hasn't been, but I figured I would figure it out, that I would learn whatever I needed to learn, because genetics is so fascinating to me, and I think I could do something good." So last week, I received an email from her mother, and Hadley just received her PhD in medicine from Baylor University and is about to start a 4-year doctoral program in London, and I'm reading this because I don't know it myself, at the Institute of Cancer Research. And her work is on cancer, a cancer called chordoma, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. But she's working on a protein that suppresses the gene that activates that type of cancer. Wow. I think she found her joy. Now, as I said, I could tell you the story of Sahana at Harker and how she, bright student, but found it so highly intense and projecting nervousness around what you were going to do. How she said, "I just went to my place of joy," when I asked her, "How do you handle that?" And I said, "What is that place of joy?" And she said, "It's music." And Sahana just graduated from Columbia University, and she's off to graduate school, and she's, I love this, majoring in jazz. Now, when we were designing the cover of our literary magazine, the students usually submit art all across the grades, but this year, because we were on Zoom, we simply left it for the middle school. And they sent them in by email, and then Marguerite, our designer, decided to put a lot of them together. And I showed you this before, but each one of these squares has a piece of art by one of our students. And you'll notice they're all little vignettes of life in the mind of a middle school student, the pencil for work in the classroom, and the group of children getting together and talking, and the bicycle. And then there's even a coronavirus right down here at the bottom. So the discussion was, well, we're in the middle of a pandemic. Let's put the coronavirus in the middle of the design. And I thought about that, and I thought, well, on the one hand, it does make sense historically, but on the other hand, it doesn't make sense philosophically. Because the coronavirus, the pandemic, is not at the center of our universe. What is at the center of our universe? Well, it's joy. And so the symbol of the heart with joy on the interior takes that place of honor. And I thought to myself, how can I explain to people who don't know us and who aren't here how that plays out in our school? Because it does. And it starts in the morning, first thing, with morning circle, when we all get together and we do the awake and ready exercises with the affirmations. I am awake and ready. I am positive, energetic, enthusiastic, and all the others that go along with that. And the children learn that they can summon up the energy to be joyful in the moment. They might get out of bed and be sleepy heads. They might not want to come to school that particular day, although most of our children really want to come to school. But when they get here, they get these awake and ready exercises. Rejoice, my body cells, is one of the affirmations. And then on Friday, when the whole school comes together here in this church, we all do yoga postures, and we calm the body, and we stretch the body. And then we gather around the dais, and we sing beautiful, uplifting songs. Songs from all different religions, because education for life, by its very nature, is universal. It doesn't belong to any one religion. And then finally, after we sing, and they love to sing, we quiet down, we center ourselves, we focus at the point between the eyebrows, and we'll meditate. Now, you might wonder, wait a second, you've got kindergartners in there. But yes, even the kindergartners learn to meditate. By the end of the year, they can meditate for 2 minutes, and some can go beyond that. And of course, as they get older, they meditate a little longer. But that's just the beginning of it. Then they go through the entire day with this approach that is so terribly individual and personal and joyful. And that makes learning absolutely a joy. Learning and joy do actually come together. It is a very wonderful way to start the day, but it's a gorgeous way to begin life's journey towards maturity. So this is a beautiful legacy that Master has given us and that has come to us through his channel, Swami Kriyananda. And this is just a brief introduction. There's so many stories, so many permutations. But I advise you to read his book. I don't have it with me. Education for Life. And to go on our website. Because on our website, you will see videos of the children I'm talking about. And you will notice that there is joy in the air. That there are all these smiling faces, whether they're doing science or math or language arts or social studies, all of the academic subjects. The approach rests on bringing together learning and joy. And I believe that was Master's dream.